an interview with Governor Attia. This is tape 20, side 2. I was suggesting that having a unilateral, or not a unilateral, but across the board cut of maybe whatever it has to be, 5%, 10%. And if the legislature doesn't accept, or if the people don't accept bipartisan or nonpartisan agreement to a package of tax cuts, and you were suggesting putting some kind of a circuit breaker in there for income levels.
Yeah, I always worry about small constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
The big constituencies, they got plenty of muscle, but there are small constituencies. Small constituencies in the line of what we were talking about, Social Security. There are some that are getting a fairly decent amount from Social Security. There are some that are getting a rather low amount on Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the low amount Social Security, that's a smaller constituency.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to watch out for those folks. And those on welfare. Some at the just barely have are getting into welfare, and some are really in very desperate shape. A smaller constituency, those in really in desperate shape, got to take care of them. Then there's larger, more defined group of a small constituency. You always have to worry about it. It may very well be that you follow the theory that what you said, you have some kind of a bipartisan group of people that sit down and work out a budget, and you've got to raise this much revenue, and you've got to cut this much budget, and then that's presented as a package, and you vote on the package. But then you say, at some point, somebody's going to have to sit down and figure this all out.
Right.
And so, okay, now that's it. That's your package. Now you go now work it out as to who gets what out of that package. The elected legislators got to do something at some point in time. Got to stand up at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get down to keep your base open and close mine. The fact is you've got to cut. You've got to make a cut. We all know that. All of us that have now voted for this formula of increased revenues and decreased budgets. You can't expect this body that we're going to put together to understand the complexity of all budgets that are in the federal government or even in the state government. You can't expect that of them. They have to look at the large picture. And so then they say, okay, now we've done that. You've got to do that. You've got to do that. They may figure, say, you have to raise revenues, and they might tell you how to raise revenues. That's a little bit different rather than cutting budgets. That's by far more complex. But none of them, they say, okay, that's how we're going to raise the revenue, and now we have to figure out the other half of this,
mm-hmm.
which is cutting the budgets, and go about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It could be done. It could be done. There's no question. You bring up the point. We've got to do something.
Well, I've never heard that suggested before, doing it like base closures are done.
Yeah.
I've never heard that suggested by anyone, and yet it seems like on the state level and on the national level, people are just incapable of making those difficult decisions.
I know.
And even though it would be best for them to be able to stand up and be counted, if it's not going to happen, then it needs to be, I mean, maybe that's a failing of democracy, and it needs
well,
to
it
be.
Well, it is to a degree. I have taken a personal position while I was a legislator. And people say that taxes are too high. You got to cut budgets. And my answer to them was always, okay, I don't disagree with you. But are you willing to cut the budget of your special interest?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not willing to cut the budget of your special interest, then you really don't want to cut budgets.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say, cut all those guys, but not me.
Right.
Then you're not committed to cutting the budget.
Right.
Once you say cut mine and mm-hmm. all those others, then I believe you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that message will ever come that clear, because you're right. And in some instances, let's talk about small constituencies. And you talked about an air base, which in fact was the town. And so they closed the air base, effectively closing down the town. It's got to be a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an air base in Portland, Oregon. So they closed the air base in Portland, Oregon. That's not the whole city of Portland. And so Portland may not like it, but it's those other smaller number of people that are losing their jobs. But in Toledo, Oregon, where that air base was, I mean, this is really bad news. The whole town is out of work. Mm-hmm. Back to this small constituency thing. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that over the years that we're always trying to find simple answers to complex questions, and part of the dodge of a politician is to make it complex, like I'm just doing with you. I'm not being political about it. I'm being more practical about it. I knew I had to cut. While I was governor, I cut. Mm-hmm. And raise revenue. So I've gone through it, and I understand it, and I know about it. We'll talk about it when the time comes. And my own personal view is you do what you think is right. I do what I think is right, and if people don't like it, they won't elect me. That's our system of government. Everybody doesn't face it that way. As a matter of fact, most people don't face it that way. Most elected officials don't.
Well, when you were in the legislature and when you were in government, when you later became governor and now with the current economic crisis, you hear a lot of people talking about cutting the fat out of government.
Yeah.
Where is that fat, and is it just one person's fat as another person's meat, or is there really fat to be cut?
Yeah, there is. There is. However, it never measures up to the size of the dollars you're dealing with. Let's take ballot 5 now, and they say that they're going to come up short of $1 billion, $200 or $300 million. So by using that as my example. There is fat, but not $1.3 billion of fat. How much there is, I'm not sure. But far short. You can't cure half of the problem, two-thirds of the problem. You know, with fat, you might cure 5% of the problem, maybe 10% of the problem. Mm-hmm. But it's nowhere. You can't do it by just saying cut fat. Mm-hmm. It just isn't going to work. Because there's fat, but hell, there's fat in... You take any large corporation, there's fat. Right. There is. And so the government is not really any different than business. Maybe at times they're sloppier. Mm-hmm. There, I think they're sloppier because that's having been a retail businessman, having been a legislator, I understood some things in a large picture, and one of the really dangers of government is monopoly. And so you get a monopoly thinking. You know, if you don't like what the Department of Motor Vehicles is doing, you don't have an alternative to go to some other Department of Motor Vehicles. There is only one. That's the states. And so, you know, if you don't like it, tough.
Right.
Well, that's not the way business operates. Business, the fact is there's competition out there.
Right.
And if I want to keep you as a customer, then I've got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Or get you as a customer. But the government isn't that way.
But going back to the idea of cutting something across the board, couldn't you just tell an agency, look, this is where we would cut 10% out of your budget. Now, if you want to cut it out 5% out of this agency and 15% out of that agency within your own department, you know, you can solve that within your department as to where you cut that. But overall, you have to be cut 10% so that they could be a little more selective. Wouldn't that give them enough leverage to be able to,
make the adjustments? Now we're going through the exercise that I went through. We did it in terms of dollars. Mm-hmm. However, we didn't apply that uniformly on every state agency of state government. Department of Geology and Mineral Industries is a small department of Oregon. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their budget is, but it's a small budget. I'm not going to apply 10% or 15% cut on them because they're out of business if I do that. Or the Board of Aeronautics. You know, But we start dealing with human resource. That's a huge budget. Somewhere in there, we can find some money that'll take care of Board of Aeronautics and the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. So, first of all, the executive, the governor, the president, whomever, says, "Look, okay, this is the whole pot." And obviously, the president can't do it. Very few governors can do it. I did it because of my 20 years in the legislature. I knew, you know, an awful lot about it, almost every agency of government. And you sit down and work it out. Mm-hmm. That's the way I feel about now. They call it a serious problem. It's a serious problem, but it's not one that can't be dealt with, and it can be. And it can't be, and it doesn't necessarily be involved with all the gyrations that are going on right now. Because it can be, and it can be done. Not painlessly. Forget pain. Pain is going to be there. But it can be done. How many times have I told people? Matter of fact, as recently as yesterday, they're going to close effectively close down the Department of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University, and so they were appealing to me. And I said, you know, when they tell you, as they do, we can't afford it. We've got $1.3 billion shortfall. We can't afford it. That's not the right answer. They can't afford it with what's left. They just can't afford that. Because there's still a lot of money left. Another $5 or $6 billion out there. So the answer is I can't afford it is not the right answer. Mm-hmm. I just can't afford that.
Right.
So they're making a priority decision.
Right.
Which, incidentally, all budgets are priorities. That's all they are.
Well, we don't have the same problem that, say, California has, in that we can't operate in a deficit. So
yeah, California is a crazy state. And they shouldn't let things get away from them as like they have. And they've run these tight before Duke Majin came in, and he ate 8 years. There was this huge deficit. And he worked his way through it till they got a balanced budget and began to slide because of their economy. And by that time, Pete Wilson comes in, now they're really behind the eight ball. But that's the responsibility of the elected officials. That's what they're there for. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to what we were talking about earlier. Should the legislative body do all this cutting and raising revenues, or should this independent body do it? Again, I've said, I was elected to make decisions. That's what I was elected for. I wasn't elected to make just the easy decisions. Mm-hmm. I was elected to make the hard ones and the easy ones. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't elected to say, okay, here's a tough one. Okay, I'm going to hand that off to you. I'll just keep making these easy decisions over here, and then you make the hard ones. But, you know, we get down to the real world, and that's not the way things operate. But that's always been my theory. I have voted on some very controversial things. But I said, yeah, I was elected to make these decisions. I have to make a decision. I have to vote yes or no. I can't just keep saying I'm going to, okay, on all these easy ones, I'm going to do it, that I'm not going to hurt too many people. But on these real tough ones where I might hurt a large constituency, yeah, I'm going to pass that one off to somebody else. But I know what the real world's like. Well, we certainly got far afield, didn't we?
I guess we did. Going back to 1977, some of the other issues of that term, there were measures passed to levy a 2 cent per gallon increase in the gas tax and double the auto license fee to $20 a year and raise truck weight mile taxes. So does this fit into that whole scheme of raising revenue for
of course, it was for highways and maintenance of highways. That was the argument at the time. And mm-hmm. we have this huge investment in our interstate and state and county roads, and they're going to hell in a handbasket. And we've got to raise some money for maintenance. So basically, mm-hmm. it was a maintenance thing. Strange. Oregonians just, you know, we pay $10 a year for our automobile license, and they just won't budge. It is a good deal, I'll say that. But they just won't budge, because I don't know how many times they've tried to raise a license, and it just never flies. They somehow don't mind raising the tax on the gasoline, but they sure don't want to raise the license fee.
There were measures approved in an effort to cut employers' costs for workmen's compensation insurance by eliminating circuit court reviews of injury awards and shifting more of the share of benefits for permanently and totally disabled workers to the federal Social Security system. Were you involved in that debate?
I don't recall that, but that's that brings up the subject of what really these, all of these mixed signals. Social Security was meant for retirement. Workers' compensation was mean to be compensated for injuries. And if you watched over the years, all kinds of social problems problems have crept in. They're going to solve it with Social Security. They're going to Medicare, Medicaid.
Right.
We're going to solve the injured worker, the widows, all kinds of things. All of these other social programs creep in. And its purity has been lost in the process. I don't recall being involved in that particularly.
Well, going to some of the legislation that that you sponsored, you had a bill which authorizes police officers to stop motor vehicles for inspection of registration cards and license. That was left in committee. Was that regarding drunk driving or?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's all part of the same. Driving while suspended licenses. There's a whole bunch of those folks out there. You were interviewing Ted Halleck. I can recall an argument with Ted Halleck because I wanted to do was that we would have a few inspectors out there, mm-hmm. Who if I lost my driver's license, that they would be kind of patrolling to see if I'm driving my car. Now, it would be an at-random thing. You've got a whole lot of them out there, so you really don't, mm-hmm. you don't have enough inspectors to cover everybody. But this at-random thing is very much like your tax return. It's at-random audited, so they don't have that many auditors, but it keeps you kind of honest because you don't know when they're gonna start looking at yours. Same idea. Well, old Teddy thought this was spying and what a terrible thing. I thought it was a hell of a good idea. Teddy thought it was a terrible idea. This spy, this democracy, and talk terrible to the government because you're doing something like that. Yeah. Difference of opinion. I think it would have worked. But anyway, yes, the answer is yeah. There's a whole lot of people out there driving suspended driver's licenses, uninsured, and the whole thing.
You had a number of bills which were signed by the governor in this term. One was Senate Bill 655, which would allow people to become candidates for precinct committee person within the same county and adjoining precinct of his residence. So, in other words...
Oh, yeah. That actually, you could be a precinct committee man or woman. Mm-hmm. Either in yours or the one
adjacent,
contiguous to yours. Mm-hmm. All parties have problems getting precinct committee people, and you might have several people who'd be willing to serve, but you only have two, mm-hmm. in each precinct, and so this gives you a chance to get more coverage. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You had one for the Oregon Rail Association that the governor signed, Senate Bill 662. Exempt certain agreements between carriers approved by Federal Interstate Commerce Commission from being considered illegal under Oregon antitrust laws. Do you recall anything about that?
No, I don't. I don't. There's got to be some reason there, but I don't remember what that is.
That was for the Oregon Rail Association.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You had another one that was left in committee that was at the request of Jim Allison, a land use consultant regarding farmlands. requires a county assessor making special assessment for farmland to make notation on assessment and tax rolls of assessed value of taxpayers' property not used for farming and assessed value of farmland if it had not received special assessment for farm use. That was left in committee. Senate Bill 709.
Yeah, I'm trying to read. Would you read that again to me?
Sure.
I don't recall that. But By that I mean specifically what we were trying to solve. Jim Ellison. I remember vividly Jim Ellison from various counts, but first of all, he was a Republican chairman, a Washington County chairman. But he was a very activist in terms of ag land, the whole matter of, remember we talked earlier about his son wanting to build a house, and that was,
right.
he was livid about that kind of thing. I'm not quite sure what we were trying to deal with. It nonetheless would have some bearing on the designation of farmland, how it was being used, the goals that related to it, but I can't get any more definitive than that.
Mm-hmm. Could it have had something to do with the aftermath of the LCDC?
Oh yeah, it all comes after all comes after adoption of the goals and guidelines of Senate Bill 100.
The 19 goals that you were talking about the other day.
Yeah.
Another one that was signed by the governor, Senate Bill 867 for the state treasurer, requires certain information to accompany general obligation bond issues of local governments.
I can't recall. Generally, again, I'm giving you general answers that relate to offerings and bonding, but there was a reason for it, but most of these are relatively obscure, tinkering a little here, a little there.
I guess I just mentioned them in case there's something that might come up.
I understand.
Senate Bill 919 was signed by the governor. It allows state military department to seek and receive monetary grants and donations for Oregon National Guard Military Museum and to donate property.
Yeah. I remember that one.
Well, maybe you could tell me a little bit about that.
I have a great interest in and high regard for the military, and particularly our National Guard. And also, as you know, I have a great interest in history. And the concept was that there'd be an established Oregon Military Museum. The idea related to those that had served or some relationship to Oregon or something that would designate that. Museum is going now. It's sort of in limbo right now, to be honest with you. Have a fine collection. Of things. We had great scrounger who was part of the National Guard and now is actually somewhere in the Midwest, I think Iowa. Things like, beside the, you know, the rifles and machine guns, and there's photographs and medals and uniforms, and but they also have a Japanese tank. He went over to Utah, I think, and got it. They were using it for gunnery practice, and so he got, I think, two or three of them so he could make one good one. Got the only, I say not only, I think one of two or three original PT boats. Original PT boat. There's some argument about that. Why do we have a PT boat? I'm not quite sure why we do it. But anyway, those are the largest things. I'm quite familiar with it. We got it started, got it going, but it's kind of limped along. A lot depends on the Adjutant General and their view of it. Dick Miller was quite interested, and his successor, Reese, after I left office, was less so. I've talked to the Adjutant General now because it is kind of languishing, and he has an interest in it. He does believe in it and believe it ought to continue. So we started, but it sort of limped along over the years. And but there's a lot of good things out there. There's maybe some really first-rate items that have been collected. So I think it would be great. But that I remember that.
Then you had another bill for the State Highway Fund for footpaths and bicycle paths. It defines expended. That was the only information I could find.
Yeah, that, well, again, I can't remember that specifically. It was quite controversial to spend some money from highway funds to make bicycle paths. And, there was a lot of thought that was it's for automobiles, not people on bicycles. Some Stathos down in Medford is the one that cranked that up initially. I'm not sure. And maybe this related to some kind of limitation because there was a constant argument as to how much money to spend on these things, but I, again, can't remember. I'm just giving you sort of general comments about that subject.
Yet another bill, Senate Bill 922, which was at the request of Oregon Common Cause and the Oregon Gray Panthers, for board members to be selected from public at large of certain regulatory and advisory boards. It was left in committee. I guess it's kind of interesting that Common Cause would come to you.
And particularly the Common Cause. Common Cause and I weren't that far apart.
Really?
Which Panthers?
Gray Panthers?
Gray Panthers. These are the old folks. Us old folks. Read one more time. I'm trying to make the connection.
To board members to be selected from public at large of certain regulatory and advisory boards?
Of or for, I don't know. Well, anyway, no, I can't remember that.
Uh-huh.
There was always a concept that these folks are taking advantage of us and secretive, and we got to let the public peek in there, but I'm not sure that relates to that.
Another one was at the request of the Oregon Security Association regarding private security industry in the Department of Commerce.
Yeah, that one, it's strange how that little thing, I remember it. But it was a matter of training requirements for one that's going to call themselves a security guard. That one basically came from the more professional ones,
mm-hmm.
Where you had a lot of mom and pop people that would offer themselves out as security guards, but not necessarily particular training or ability to deal with mm-hmm. an emergency. However, it was the mom and pop thing that kind of stopped it. You know, you're taking away our bread and butter. So mm-hmm. That didn't pass. I don't think you have that.
No, that was left in committee.
Yeah.
And you had another one here that was tabled, Senate Bill 1000, at the request of Utilities Security Association of Oregon, makes firing guns at electric power facilities a criminal offense.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people shooting insulators on these power lines as target practice. And just, you know, obviously it's very costly to the mm-hmm. to ratepayers. And when these things, you know, out there way out in the middle of nowhere, there's usually hunters out hunting, you know. So try to make it a stronger offense to hopefully reduce the mm-hmm. size of that kind of vandalism.
Mm-hmm. And finally, you had another Senate Bill 1047 regarding fuel tax. Other than gas to pay tax at pump, prohibits service stations from refusing to sell diesel where posted. I remember reading something else about this too, and that if a station had a sign out there saying that they sold diesel, that they had to service everyone. They couldn't have.
They sold diesels. They really didn't want to fool around with the cars with 5 or 10 gallons of diesel. They wanted to deal with trucks. With, I don't know how much they take. I suppose 100 or 200 gallons of diesel. I don't know. And it's not one of those earth-shaking bills, though.
Well, you've mentioned it a little bit before, but how would you characterize your relationship with Governor Bob Straub's administration this time around, after having been opponents in the previous election?
I never was a combatant. Remember earlier we talked about my relationship with Tom McCall. I always dealt with an issue. Never took into account that it's Bob Straub, for example, or any single legislator. Either liked the issue or I didn't like the issue. And it had nothing to do with it, whether I liked or disliked the person. I had personal high regard for Bob Straub. Always had, even as an opponent, although reading through some of my campaign stuff over the past few years since I left, I did say some harsh things about him during the campaign. Well, not him personally, but some of his programs and things of that kind. But I really like Bob. Our relationship was good.
Of course, Phil Lang was the